The following is a presentation of Sports Addict Media.
Welcome to another edition of the Sports Talk 365 podcast. Joe Sikoa here with you, and we're actually changing it up a little bit here as we're recording this as a Sports Talk 365 podcast. I will have my Two Cups of Joe co-host Joe Cacavalli with me as well on this podcast, and of course we're going to have Albert Plantamora as we have a jam-packed podcast to get in. It's been a few weeks since we have been live on the air, and a lot of things have happened. We're going to get into the insane playoffs that are going on right now in both the NBA and the NHL. I mean, Madison Square Garden has been electric over this past weekend as both the Knicks and the Rangers take full advantage of the world's most famous arena and jump out to 2-0 series leads in their respective series. The Knicks against the 76ers, the Rangers against the Washington Capitals, as both series now shift to their game threes and on the road. We are going to talk about both of those series. Of course, we'll also take a look at the playoffs as a whole, where all of the matchups stand at this current point of this podcast, of course, as we're recording it here on Wednesday, April 24th. We'll get a quick little check-in with the Yankees and the Mets as we are about a month in to the baseball season. And then, of course, with Albert Plantamora, we are going to preview the NFL draft that gets underway tomorrow night. And, of course, the Jets and the Giants are up there in the draft. The Jets make the move of trading Zach Wilson to the Denver Broncos. So a lot of things have happened here, Joe, over the last couple of weeks since we've actually been live on the air.
And that's an understatement to say the least. I mean, obviously, you and I have been incredibly stressed out the last couple of weeks, not only with the Rangers and the Knicks, but also the way the Islanders have been disappointing me. But, I mean, this is why this is one of the best times of year. I mean, you're getting full swing into baseball season. You basically have pretty much any sport on every night that you want with the NHL and the NBA playoffs going on. Now, of course, we can dive into the draft talk. I mean, there's so much going on, especially in the world of New York. I mean, remember you and I talking throughout last year, hoping that something good was going to come out of this city pretty soon. Obviously, the Rangers and the Knicks could be the best shots right now, but it's going to be pretty fun to watch, and hopefully the picks fall on the right way for the Jets and Giants starting tomorrow night.
Yeah, it is kind of crazy how time does fly, because last year, you're right, we were both sitting here miserable. Like, what's the New York team that's going to jump out? Obviously, last year, the disappointment, first round, surprising exit by the New York Rangers at the hands of the New Jersey Devils. The Knicks didn't have a great season last year. The Yankees and the Mets didn't make the playoffs. It was doom and gloom around the New York area, and things have really turned around in 365 days, that is for sure. So, as Joe mentioned, a lot of exciting things to go around. Let's start with the NBA playoffs, maybe, because the Knicks right now, I mean, the Garden, like I said at the top of the podcast here, has been electric over the last 4 days. Now, of course, they'll get a little bit of a break before those teams come home. Maybe they don't come home. Maybe both the Knicks and the Rangers can wrap their series up very quickly. That's the hope, right? But the New York Knicks, I mean, boy, oh boy. First of all, let's set it up. Philadelphia 76ers, the 7th seed, they come in, and they're kind of walking in with this type of swagger, Joe, where, yeah, we wanted the Knicks. It's the easier matchup. Well, guess what? You're down 2-0. And, of course, game one was electric. The Knicks, I thought, was probably their better of the two games thus far. Game two, they struggled a little bit. They had a fight and claw their way back, and then it was an insane last 2 to 3 minutes in that game. You know, and then you hear the reports afterwards, like there could have been a foul here, there could have been a foul there, there should have been a timeout granted here. But what has been your overall take on these first two games of this series, and especially for a team like the 76ers who are going to come in and run their mouth, and now they find themselves down 0-2 going back home?
I think this was one of those series that a lot of people thought the seeding kind of told a lie. We knew the Sixers were a lot more talented than the seventh seed, but with the health problems that Joel Embiid was facing throughout this year coming in, obviously they were underperforming as far as their record goes, since Embiid was only able to make it back for really the last five games of the season. He was out for a good chunk of the year. But I want to make one thing, Joe, about can we please get rid of the NBA final two-minute reports? Because clearly all these things do is anger fan bases and make the media question things. I mean, it's incredibly unfortunate that the Sixers ran into that situation. Obviously, me being a Knicks fan, I was happy the way things turned out. But obviously, if the shoe was on the other foot and I was a Sixers fan, I'd be pretty pissed.
Yeah.
And it really does no good for anybody coming out and saying these things. I mean, Joe, we remember, of course, the big story of Jim Joyce ruining Armando Galarraga's perfect game about 10 years ago. He admitted at the time that he was wrong. So if there's any official that wants to come out and say, hey, I was wrong, I messed up, I saw X, Y, and Z, and it ended up being the wrong call, that's fine with me. But we need to stop undermining officials in this way only because it's making it seem like they either blatantly didn't see it or got it wrong. But I think we've seen, Joe, in the playoffs, really in both the NBA and the NHL, that referees are a little more lenient when it comes to some of the contact that's going on. It was going on both ways in the beginning of this series. So I feel like that's kind of what I feel about that. I think we need to stop with the reports from, you know, these button pushers after the fact that, you know what, at the end of the day, it's really not helping anybody. The Knicks are up 2-0. The Sixers can't protest the game. They won't protest the game. And they now have to go home in this series and figure things out. So I would probably expect them to win tomorrow night.
Makes you wonder now how things are going to be called down in Philadelphia. Look, I don't care which way you look at it. Wherever you are, you know, if you're in Madison Square Garden, you're down in Philadelphia, atmospheres definitely do play a little bit of a factor, I think, in the officiating. Listen, I'm not going to sit here and deny it, too, because you're right in the sense of, you know, Knicks fans are benefiting from that report and how it kind of looks like it's in the Knicks' favor. I mean, we take a look at the officiating in the Rangers-Capitals series, and we'll talk a little bit about that when we get to that point, but similar situation last night, you know, in the game in Game 2, Artemi Panarin and TJ Oshie were kind of battling it out throughout the night, and it just so happened to be, and, you know, Artemi Panarin is not a player that is a goon in the league. He's an elite scorer in this league, and it just so happened that he got a hit on Oshie that was kind of in a crouching position, but there his shoulder made contact with his head, and it was reviewed. Originally, it was called a penalty. It was reviewed, and it wasn't actually a penalty. And then they gave a clear indication of why it wasn't a penalty. So, yeah, I mean, I get that point. It's going to, you know, anger fan bases. I do agree. Probably we shouldn't be publishing out these reports or whatnot. But my concern here now, Joe, is, again, game one for the Knicks was really good. That was an overall good team effort. Game two, they seemed to struggle a little bit. You have to anticipate now going down in game three, given the fact you're in Philadelphia, which they have probably one of the worst fan bases out there. And again, the 76ers are still talking this crap. Embiid in his postgame after Game 2 said, we're the better team. We're going to win this series down 0-2. And looking at how the Knicks struggled a little bit in Game 2, is there some sort of concern for this Knicks team going into Game 3?
I think the biggest concern for them is probably the way Jalen Brunson has looked in the first two games of this series. He's not been himself. He hasn't been shooting with the same quality. You obviously think that'll regress a little bit towards the mean, but they've had a very much a next man up mentality. Josh Hart has been critical the first two games of this series. Bojan Bogdanovic had some big buckets in game two. Isaiah Hartenstein down the stretch. I mean, the Knicks are playing their brand of basketball, but their star player really hasn't been himself in the first two games. Now, part of that could be playoff jitters, could also be a little bit of maybe a little bit of exhaustion piling up from the amount of minutes that they play in the regular season.
Fatigue.
But also, the Sixers have had a really good defensive game plan against Brunson. But the Knicks, their biggest concern right now shouldn't be Joel Embiid, I think. It should be Tyrese Maxey. He has been incredible the first two games of this series. They ruled him questionable in game two with an illness. That clearly did not slow him down. So even though the Knicks are obviously very happy to win both games at home, as you should as the higher seed, there definitely were some things they need to work on coming out of game two. Now, it's better for them that they have the extra day off so they can retinker some things and guys can get some rest. But there was definitely a bit to be desired there, especially from the big-time players of the Knicks. So even though this series is 2-0, I have to agree with Embiid. I might not say they're the better team, but this series is by no means over, especially with back-to-back games in Philly.
Well, we're joined now by Albert Plantemar. And Al, welcome in this time, of course, as we mentioned, to our audience doing this podcast rather than a live show. We're actually talking about the Knicks, and the reason why I wanted to get you in on this as well, because you're as big a Knicks fan as anyone I know as well, and you have been watching the games. We were kind of talking about how electric it was at the Garden, but my question that I posed to Joe before, and now I want to get your take on this, the Knicks are up 2-0. Their game one was far better than their game two. Game two, they seemed to had struggled a little bit. They had to fight and claw their way back into the game. And then, of course, an insane last 2 minutes. And really, like I said, now going down to Philadelphia for game three, is there any concern for you with this Knicks going down, you know, up 2-0, knowing that this Philly team has to kind of come out with some desperation?
Definitely. If any Knicks fan says there's no concern, I think they're lying. One, this isn't a normal 2-7 match. Okay, Philly's a 7 because Embiid was out for 2 months. Philly would probably be the 2, if not the 3 at worst. So the Knicks should not have matched up with them, you know, if everything had been, you know, they played at their level the entire season. Obviously, they're a different team with Embiid as they have him right now. So already we're playing, you know, second, third best team in the East. It's not a normal 7 seed. And both games the Knicks could have easily lost. Jalen Brunson, who I couldn't possibly be higher on, I personally think he's the MVP of the league. Some people say, you know, top 5. I think anything worse than top 3, I think, is criminal. But he has not played well this series. He's shooting about 30% for the first 2 games. I saw some statistic, anybody with like 50 or more shot attempts like have never shot this low. So he, not only is he not doing what he did during the season, he's actually hurting the team a little bit. Luckily, everybody else is picking up the, you know, the slack in game two. It just wasn't as sharp as game one. But they could have easily lost both games, particularly game two, where I feel like we were outplayed almost the whole game until the very end. Game one, we were outplayed at, you know, the first quarter. Embiid went out. We came back. And then, you know, second half was, you know, kind of back and forth. But easily could have lost both of those games. Those are at home. I think if Brunson plays the way Brunson played all season, I think I'm not scared. But if Brunson continues to play this way, I am worried, you know, on the road. We just pulled out these 2 wins, and that was at home. So now you bring it, you know, on the road, Embiid. I was going to say,
Embiid's probably playing at like 65, 70% at this point. You could tell he's struggling with that knee, but he's still contributing.
It's hampering his game considerably. Embiid is, you know, one of the greats we'll ever see. And you can see his game is a few less dimensions than it normally is. He's kind of staying back more. He can't be as physical on the defensive or offensive side. Maxey's playing completely like that. He's playing. He's the best point guard in the series so far. So yeah, there's concern. I'd like to see us, if we get one in Philly, then I'm not worried. If we're up 3-1 with 3 to go, I don't think we'll lose the series. But if they take both in Philadelphia and it becomes a 3-game series, I will be legitimately scared that we're going to lose the series.
Now, before we take
a look, remember, most analysts picked Philly. Way more people picked Philly.
Now, before we get into the rest of the playoffs, just to kind of get a quick look at where everyone stands, I want to get both of your takes on this now before we move on. Tom Thibodeau, not one of the finalists for Coach of the Year, and he basically got this Knicks team to 50-plus wins with half a roster. Then, in the same breath of him not being a coach of the year, there's a report that comes out from The Athletic that The Athletic did a anonymous poll amongst players, and Tom Thibodeau is at the top of the list of players that would want to least likely play for Tom Thibodeau. So I'm curious as your take to kind of both sides of this this situation here with Tom Thibodeau. Joe, I'll start with you.
It's not really a surprise to me. I've seen, you know, I kind of mentioned it before with Brunson. Tom Thibodeau demands a lot from his players, especially during the regular season. I know the NBA has been trying to crack down a lot of load management, but I feel like a lot of players, especially as they're becoming stars and starting to get paid, they want to win championships, but at the same time, they don't want a coach that's going to be in their ear constantly about defense and rebounding. And the Knicks are lucky that they found a group of guys that are buying into what Tom Thibodeau is selling, but I'm not surprised at all that people feel this way. I mean, it's no big surprise that the Knicks haven't really gotten a big-time star to come here in the time since Tom Thibodeau has been here. He plays a physical and demanding game of basketball. He wants his guys to follow that same standard. He'll play 30, 40 minutes a night to get you to that point. So as much as players, some of them like to be coached that way, I'm not really surprised that a lot of the bigger name players probably don't want to deal with that, and they don't want to deal with that wear and tear on their bodies as they start to get into the later stages of their career.
Al?
So I can tell you right now, it doesn't shock me one bit. Okay, so let's start with the first thing. The fact that he's not, now I think, clearly, coach of the year. Number two seed in the East. 50-plus wins for the first time in 20-something years. With this roster, I mean, I see the other thing, Minnesota, legitimate, you know, candidate, you know, but I personally think Thibodeau should be it. But the fact that he's not a top three shows that, you know, it's a bit of a popularity contest, like most, you know, awards. So that doesn't surprise me. The other thing you said about, you know, coaches, players polling that, you know who else players don't like? Bill Belichick. You know who else players hated? Tom Coughlin. Two of the best coaches we've ever seen, you know, in football. Because why? They're hard coaches. They're coaches that are going to make you work. They're not Steve Kerr, you know, they're not Tyronn Lue, you know, where
anyone,
really
anyone that walks in that, you know, coaches a team that has LeBron James on it.
Yeah, so no, LeBron's not going to want to come here. One, the NBA is a star-driven league, far more than any other sport. So the players, especially big-name players like LeBron, they want to coach the team. Literally, you think LeBron's not half-coaching that team? Of course he is. You know, and players want that, and they don't want a coach that's going to make them bust their ass on both sides of the ball. Notice that the Knicks are the best defensive team in basketball. Well, I mean, that comes because of practice, because of game plan. Players don't want to see, one, they don't want to put in the work. Two, that diminishes, you know, what they do on the offensive side. If you're exerting all this effort on defense, you're going to put up less offensive numbers. They're not getting contracts because of their defense. They're not getting endorsements, certainly, because of their defense. They want to score, you know, which is why scoring is up now than it was, you know, 30 years ago, because less defense is played, more focus is put on offense. So it doesn't surprise me, but I think we have the right group of guys. I would be surprised if anyone aside from Randall said that on the Knicks team. Brunson's a workhorse. His father's a coach. He knows the deal, which is why he's becoming one of the best players in the league, because he puts in that work. Do I think we're going to get a veteran superstar like LeBron coming here? No, I don't. And I'm fine with that. You know, I don't want him. Guess what? Missed another game-winning shot yesterday. So I'll take workhorse. And as I said the other day, this is a gritty team. They work hard. These Josh Harts and, you know, the Jalen Brunsons. DiVincenzo, there we go. You know, these are the type of players we want here. If we can, you know, bring in one more star, I think that would put them over the hump. You know, and you just need a guy with the right mentality. But, no, you're not going to get a diva. A diva's not going to want to come here.
It's amazing. Multi-million dollar players, they don't want to put in work. Isn't that amazing? That's usually what what America's all about these days, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's not just in sports; it's cultural, yeah. You know. And one, they want it the easiest way possible. But you know what? The easiest way, I guarantee you, you take some of the best players in basketball. I think Philly's a well coached team, but Lakers had like a coach in the Knicks and they worked like this, they wouldn't be selling out like they are now. You know, teams, the Suns, you know, No, they wouldn't be selling out like this because, you know, they don't have this kind of coach.
That's why I look at it. I don't know if anyone else, I don't know if you guys make this connection, but I always think about this, you know, especially when talking in this type of topic, in this type of conversation. But you ever notice head coaches, managers from all different sports, they never really were stars if they played. Now, not all coaches played the game itself, but were around it and know well enough to be able to coach at the highest level. But I always look at it as, like, if you take a look at the coaches around the league, they're not guys that were stars of their sport. Because I feel like stars think who they are, that they don't really need to be coached, or they, and I think that they're too good in order to be a coach. Michael Jordan, right? Never really was a coach, became an owner, but never a coach. Wayne Gretzky tried to coach in hockey. It didn't work out. I feel like it's the gritty guys, the guys that actually will spend 14 to 18 hours looking at their sport, putting their dedication in. Those are the guys that the little details of the games are the ones that become coaches. I mean, that's just,
yeah,
that's just my thought.
I say that all the time. I think when you look at the greats, they didn't have to put in that kind of work. Now, I'm not saying they didn't put in work. Of course, LeBron has busted his ass his entire career and before his career. But a lot of it just came natural to them. And they expect others to be able to do that. Well, most people aren't gifted like LeBron James.
Yeah.
So they have to put in that work. When you look at the Pat Rileys, the Phil Jacksons, the guys that were players, they were mediocre players. So they knew what kind of work had to be put in. You know, the only great player I could think that I thought was a great coach was Larry Bird. And again, one of the smartest players you'll ever see. Mm-hmm. So typically, I think you don't see it because they think other people should just be able to do what they did. Like, I don't know if LeBron would make a good coach. He's got a huge basketball IQ, but he's not going to understand people not being able to do what he could do.
Yeah. But. All right, let's take a look at the rest of the NBA playoffs quickly here. Right now, we'll take a look at the Eastern Conference. In Game 2 that's going on right now with about 7 minutes to go in the fourth quarter as we're recording this, the Heat are actually leading the Celtics 92-83. Boston has a one-game-to-nothing lead in that series. But if the Heat can hold on here, they'll tie that series going back to Miami. The 4-5 matchup, the Cleveland Cavaliers and Orlando Magic. They'll play tomorrow, the 25th, at 7 p.m. That is a Cleveland 2-0 lead. The Bucks and the Pacers will start or get Game 3 going on Thursday. That series is tied at 1-1. And as we mentioned, the Knicks and the 76ers, the Knicks with a 2-0 lead. They head to Game 3 down in Philadelphia tomorrow, the 25th, at 7:30. Over in the Western Conference, the Oklahoma City Thunder in Game 2 will happen later on tonight here on the 24th as we record this. They lead it 1-0 over the Pelicans. Game 3 will happen between the Clippers and the Mavericks on Thursday as well. That series is tied at 1-1. Game 3 will happen Thursday for the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Phoenix Suns. Minnesota leads that series 2-0, and Denver leads their series 2-0 over the Lakers. And that is a look at the NBA playoffs thus far. And of course, as we continue to monitor everything and we have our shows or podcasts, we will keep you appraised of it. You're listening to the Sports Talk 365 podcast. Again, changing it up a little bit. Normally, this is the crew that's on Two Cups of Joe, a live show, but we decided to change it up since it's my spring break and I'm up in PA and we could just record it and not have to worry about going live. Real quickly, taking a look at the Stanley Cup playoffs. Again, another league where it's grueling when you have to get out of the first round here, but there have been some really, really good matchups. Take a look at the matchups first before we touch quickly on the Rangers and the Islanders. Eastern Conference, the Panthers and the Lightning. Florida leads that series 2-0. That was the first series that went to overtime last night in these playoffs. So apparently, since the first time since 1997, it took this long within the playoffs within the playoffs, at least in the first round, for a game to go to overtime, but it was the Panthers and Lightning. The Panthers came out on top, and they have a 2-0 lead as they head to Tampa in this Battle of Florida for Game 3. Right now, Game 3 underway between the Bruins and the Maple Leafs. They are tied at 1 in the third period as we're recording this. Game 3 shifts to Washington Friday night as the Rangers and the Capitals will face off. The Rangers with a 2-0 lead. We'll talk about that in just a minute. And Game 3 shifts over to UBS Arena as the Islanders are now in a hole down 2-0 near the Carolina Hurricanes. They had Game 2 in the bag, and they completely collapsed. We'll touch base on that in a minute, not to give Joe some misery, although part of me likes that. Over in the Western Conference, you have the Stars and the Golden Knights. Vegas got their Game 1 victory. They lead that series 1-0. They are the defending Stanley Cup champions. Game 3 will shift to Colorado as the Jets and the Avalanche. This is another making of a really good first-round series. That series is tied at 1-1. The Canucks and the Predators are tied at 1-1. The Predators were probably one of the hottest teams in the NHL from the deadline all the way here into the playoffs. They're able to steal one on the road in Vancouver. So, again, that series is tied at 1-1. And then you have the Edmonton Oilers and LA Kings. Edmonton has a 1-0 lead as they defeated the Kings in Game 1 by a score of 7-4. All right. Quickly talking on the locals again, as we mentioned, Madison Square Garden has been electric over the last couple of days between the Knicks taking their 2 home games and the Rangers coming out and taking their 2 home games. The Rangers won Game 1 fashionably 4-1 in what was pretty much a total domination of the Capitals in that game. Game 2, a little bit closer. You had to anticipate the Capitals coming out with a little bit more desperation. They did. The Capitals actually had taken a 1-0 lead before the Rangers were able to tie it, and this game went back and forth. A lot of penalties in the game, but the Rangers were able to edge out the Capitals as they head home. And now, same thing here. It's almost like the Rangers and the Knicks, guys. It's kind of like similarity here, and Joe, I think you'll understand it as well. As a Ranger fan, you know, you get a lot of people, oh, this series is over. And with the Rangers being the President's Trophy winner and the curse that comes with it, and everybody is just, you know, bandwagoning with the Rangers here, I take it 1 game at a time. The Rangers need to win this game. This is going to probably be the most desperate game that the Capitals are going to try to do here. And, of course, the Rangers know all too well that 2-0 leads in a series doesn't mean anything, because they had that against the Devils last year. And the Devils then fired off 4 straight wins. So the Rangers have to be prepared for this in probably what's going to be the most desperate game of the season for the Capitals. The Rangers have to match that desperation and intensity. But things are clicking in the sense of they're getting the ample goal scoring from their top guns, but as well as their fourth line. Their fourth line, guys, was the story in Game 1. I mean, listen, I was there for Game 1. The building literally was shaking, not only for that first goal, but the fact that it came from Matt Rempe, who has become an insane fan favorite. And Al, I don't know if you have been able to watch any of the Ranger games, but that Game 1 was pretty exciting. And this kid, Matt Rempe, big guy, 7 feet tall on skates, and he hits anything that moves, but he's also creating chances. And it's funny because it's interesting. You got Islander fans and Devil fans, who they're not even in the playoffs, like to chirp at the fact that Matt Rempe is not a hockey player. Well, guess what? He's creating chances. So that's why it's a big F you to the Islander fans that say that. I don't think Joe's one of those people that say that. But if he did, I'd probably tell him the same thing I would tell every single Islander fan, is basically F you, because he is a hockey player. But the Rangers have been pretty good through these first 2 games. The penalty kill has been good. They're getting the depth scoring, and I think that's the most important thing in the playoffs. You cannot rely on just your top 6. It's going to take your entire group, your entire unit. Al, have you been able to watch any of the Ranger games?
I did. I got to saw Game 1. Game 2, I saw the end of, so actually I saw the best part of it. But Game 1, I saw it, and I felt like you know, with pretty, kind of domination. And, you know, and not as a follower of hockey as much as you, to me it looked like they were a different class from the Capitals, at least from what I saw in game one.
No, listen, and there's no question about that, but, you know, listen, they can't take anything in the playoffs. Anything can happen, especially in the hockey playoffs. Momentum can shift at any moment. And yeah, you know, you caught the back end of game two. It was almost similar to the back end of game two at the Knicks and how intense it was, because the Capitals had the Rangers pinned in their end 6-on-5 with that extra attacker on for the final 2 minutes, and the Rangers were literally pinned, could not get those guys off the ice. So it was mayhem in the final 2 minutes. But like I said, same thing here. Rangers have to play just as desperate as the Capitals on Friday night. Now you got the New York Islanders, where game one, Patrick Waugh thought that the team played very good. It was just, you know, an unfortunate start for them. They come out, and they come out with a different tone. They came out flying. The Islanders were up 3-0. And then things started to crumble. Unfortunately, something that has been too familiar to Islander fans all season long is the amount of third period blown leads this entire season. I think, if I'm not mistaken, they had at least 23, 24 games in which they led going into the third period and wound up losing those games. And boy, what a time for that to happen in the playoffs. I mean, everything just unfolded, and it happened in a matter of minutes. And then after they had tied the game, it only took them 9 seconds to come right back down the ice and take the lead, and now have a 2-0 lead going back to Long Island. And Joe, again, I know it's, you know, you're at your high with the Knicks right now, but then the Islanders kind of just bring it right back down. I mean, you must have went from an incredible high watching that Knicks game, then flipped it over to the Islander game, because that's exactly what I did. I watched the Knicks game, flipped over to the Islander game, and I said, whoa, that was bad.
Yeah, whatever sociopath decided to put those games on both for a 7:30 start, I'd like to have a serious heart-to-heart with them, because I don't think my cardiologist will appreciate them doing that anymore. But it's an unfortunate sight, Joe, and like you kind of said, it's a microcosm of their season. They obviously got hot right at the end, much like they did last year, and kind of squeaked into the playoffs. But this is a team that we knew had a lot of problems, had a lot of holes, especially holding leads in the third period. They're, as always, you know, struggling a little bit with the penalty kill. And obviously with a team like Carolina, once you let them back into the game, it's really hard to kind of stop that momentum. So once they kind of tie it and you get the feeling that the air is getting sucked out of this team, we knew Carolina was a better hockey team coming in. I don't think anyone was going to deny that. The Islanders were almost in a mode of, let's just get there and we'll figure it out later, the way they had to play down the stretch just to get in. But it's clear that Carolina is one of the best teams in the East, especially after the trade deadline when you add Jake Guentzel to this roster. They clearly are outmanning the Islanders, and obviously anything can happen. You go back to the Island for game three. We know that UBS Arena is going to be rocking as much as possible trying to wake this team up, but I feel like, Joe, that was a foretelling that even though we kind of knew the Islanders probably weren't going to win this series, I think the ending of game two pretty much confirmed that.
Well, listen, at this point, if everything goes right for the Rangers here, I would love nothing more for the Islanders to at least take the 2 games at UBS and extend that series and let those two teams beat each other up, because obviously the winner of that series would play the winner of the Rangers-Capitals series. So if the Rangers can handle business, take game three, even if they don't get a sweep and come back and do it in five, let the Islanders and the Hurricanes beat the living crap out of each other. So that's something that we'll look forward to, of course. And as we mentioned, we'll continue to monitor both the NBA and the Stanley Cup playoffs. All right, before we get into our NFL draft preview, want to quickly touch base on the Yankees and the Mets. Yankees right now sharing first place at 16-8 with the Baltimore Orioles, while the Mets sit in third place, 13-11, 4 games out of first place, but 7-3 in their last 10. They had a nice little win streak going on before it was quickly snapped. And again, as we're recording this, the Yankees are beating Oakland 7-3 right now. And the Mets, They beat San Francisco 8-2 earlier today to get back into the win column. And Joe, for the Yankees, it came out of the gate hot, took a little bit of a dip, didn't have a good series against Miami. Oakland kind of pushed them a little bit here in this series, but the Yankees, for what it's worth, with the pitching always a question mark, they've done pretty well so far, wouldn't you say, in this first month of the season?
It's been pretty surprising because not only, Joe, do we talk about before the season started the loss of Gerrit Cole, what it meant for this team, and the pitching has been a lot better than expected. Marcus Stroman has held up his end of the bargain. Nestor Cortez and Carlos Rodon showing signs of what they were in their previous years. Obviously, Rodon not quite back to the Cy Young level pitcher he was with the Giants a couple years ago, but definitely looking a little better. Luis Gil has been fantastic in his return from Tommy John surgery, and even with Aaron Judge struggling to be Aaron Judge, he's picked it up in the last couple games, but the fact is Juan Soto has really given them a spark. He's made them feel like a winning team again. I mean
they gotta give some
of the
regulars have been
struggling and Soto picked it up.
They gotta give this guy a blank check. I mean, the energy that this kid brings, and he's just 26 years old. Can you imagine? I mean, there's a lot of talk that he could possibly break Ohtani's contract record.
And that's not even the possibility of him pitching.
And it just sucks because I wish that the Yankees would probably wrap this up now, but obviously that's not going to happen. It does make you wonder, though, with a couple of Boris clients jumping ship on him, it makes you wonder if Juan Soto, but again, Juan Soto's a different type of ball player than the guys that Boris has represented that didn't get the contracts that they wanted. But, I mean, I'd have to think Yankee fans will riot if Juan Soto is not a Yankee for the long-term future.
And with the taste they've gotten so far, I mean, he's making great plays in the outfield. He's having incredible hits. I mean, you saw the home run that he hit a couple of days ago against Tampa. I mean, that completely brought the stadium to its feet. So yep. Yankee fans have gotten that little bit of a taste. We all knew how good he was, and we all knew that his swing could potentially play well in Yankee Stadium. But the fact that we've seen how many star players, Joe, that come to New York and just can't seem to handle it. Yep. So the fact that he's living up to expectations so far, that's just going to make the hunger to get him here for the next 10, 12, 15 years, even greater.
I think he also brings a specific vibe and swagger to this team that this team hasn't seen in quite a long time. You know, that's the other factor, too. You have to think of the clubhouse culture and what is at stake in there, because that's always a big part of the game. As for the Mets, they started off slow. Things are starting to come together a little bit, and this is with some guys struggling. But things are looking better for the New York Mets, but now it's just a matter of, all right, is this going to be? I just feel like it has the makes of a roller coaster season with this team, and it makes you wonder what's going to happen as we approach the deadline, especially with impending free agents such as Pete Alonso.
Yeah, we knew this was going to be a big year for them. We heard the talk possibility that Pete Alonso could be traded if they don't compete. They've been dealing with so many injuries to their pitching staff. We still haven't seen Kodai Senga yet this year make his season debut, and we know that they are still trying to find some bats to get going as well. So it's good to see them starting to get going a little bit. We knew that this division is going to be tough for them as well. I don't think we thought the Marlins were going to be nearly as bad as they are, but otherwise the division is going to be very competitive. They're trying to make their run to the playoffs. Lindor had a horrendous start to the year, but he's starting to get a little bit better. So the Mets need to stick with that equal swoon, get out of it, get some guys healthy. So you'd obviously rather be having these problems in the second, third week of April as opposed to the second or third week of September when you're pushing for a playoff race. So, there's definitely better things on the horizon right now, but you still have to get some guys healthy. I mean, they haven't even gotten J.D. Martinez yet this year. He hasn't even been healthy enough to play. So definitely some things they want to get figured out, but they're starting to slowly percolate a little bit.
All right. And, of course, we'll keep an eye as the baseball season continues its march here. Again, only a month into the season, and things are looking decently okay for the Yankees and for the Mets as they try to make their way up through it. All right, now to the real reason we have Albert Plantamora here with us, and that is, of course, the NFL draft that will take place tomorrow night. The Jets and the Giants obviously are going to be big players in that. Where are the Jets? The Jets are picking at what number?
10.
The Jets are at 10. The Giants are at?
6.
6? All right, so yeah. The Giants obviously will get their, you know, will get up there first. Then the Jets. Round 1 is tomorrow, the 25th. Rounds 2 to 3 will be on Friday. And then rounds 4 through 7 on Saturday. Is this the first time they're spreading it out over 3 days?
No, they usually do.
No, I know. Last year they did that.
Oh, okay.
They've been doing that for a while now because it's a hot ticket, man. It's like, you know, watching a championship. They get high ratings. I have friends going to it tomorrow.
Yeah,
so,
this location is going to be in Detroit for this year. And obviously, before I let you guys take it away here, big news on the Jets front, and that is, of course, Zach Wilson was traded by the Jets yesterday, Al. Obviously something that everyone kind of saw coming, and it gives him a fresh start.
Well, I mean, I'm glad for him. You know, like, let's not sugarcoat this. We didn't do him any favors. We took a guy that was raw. I'll mention later, you know, got quarterbacks, I think, coming out like that. A guy coming out of BYU, he's not NFL ready. They threw him to the Wolves on a bad team with a bad offensive line and bad coaching. He wasn't going to succeed. He needed a fresh start. The Jets needed out from him. You know, he couldn't stay here. That wasn't happening. Not for him, not for us. It wouldn't be good for anyone. We got a team to take him. Actually, right now, if Denver doesn't draft the quarterback, he's a potential starter for them. I think he probably is the best quarterback on their roster. So I think we move up. We traded basically him and a 7th-round pick for a 6th-round pick. So we move up about 50 spots, and we have to cover half his contract, which is about $2.5 million. So it's good, and, you know, I hope the best for him. It wouldn't shock me if he went there and succeeded. You know, they have better coaching there, and, you know, that would really make our coaches look bad. So we'll see what happens.
Before we let you get into the full aspect of the draft preview, we'll start with the Jets and the Giants and what both teams are looking for out of this draft, and then we'll quickly have you kind of go through what the rest of the draft might look like, or at least what the first top 10 picks might be and who might be enticing for people. So, Joe, we'll start with you and the Giants. As we mentioned, picking at number 6, what's the game plan here for the Giants?
Hopefully anti-McCarthyism, because I do not want J.J. McCarthy at number 6. Look, the Giants have been connected to a quarterback for a while. The questions about Daniel Jones and his health, and we know, of course, that they can get out from under his contract at the end of next year. So there's a decent chance that either the first or second round they come away with a quarterback. Obviously, they would love it if a guy like Drake May or Jaden Daniels found their way to say it's definitely not going to happen, but it would be, of course, a beautiful thing. But, you know, there's a possibility they could trade up if one of those quarterbacks is still there and the Patriots are willing to make a move at number 3. Maybe the one like the Giants like better is still there, they make a move there. I would be perfectly comfortable if they didn't find a quarterback they like and they just went with a wide receiver, because if there's a good chance that quarterbacks go in the top 3 and maybe even the top 4, you're running a possibility that you're going to have a really talented wide receiver in your lap at number 6. So you could end up with Marvin Harrison, you could end up with Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze as well as a possibility. I think that just makes the most sense for them, because, you know, you're going to have to let Daniel Jones play this year anyway. They have Drew Lock as his backup, so they're going to kind of let those two guys figure everything out. I don't think it would be necessary to reach for a quarterback at 6 if one of those big guys isn't available. So if you can't trade up to get Daniels or May, I would really hope that they go basically best offensive weapon available, because if Daniel Jones is going to be the starter this year with the loss, they're going to need him all the weapons that they can find. So the hope is that if they don't get one of the stud quarterbacks in this draft, then hopefully the next big wide receiver is number 1 on their pecking order.
All right, and Al, as far as the Jets are concerned, picking at number 10, what's the game plan for the New York Jets?
So My opinion, it should be left tackle, left tackle, left tackle, left tackle, left tackle. I'm hearing a lot of other things. They say, well, the Jets addressed their offensive line, and we did. We brought in three new offensive linemen. Two of them are old. One of them is one of the best in the league, but he's very injury prone. You don't just need five starters. You need depth. No matter what, say your guys are perennial healthy offensive linemen, they're still going to get hurt. You know, like offensive linemen get hurt. You need depth. And this isn't, I mean, yes, we are built to win now, but we also have a young team. If you can bring in a Latham, a Fasnu, Alt, who I want more than anybody, but he's not going to fall to us if we didn't move up and they're not going to move up. You know, if you can bring this guy in who would immediately, day one, be, you know, a starter and help your team, but also be an offensive lineman that you'll have for the next 10 to 15 years, that's where I would go. I'm hearing a lot of chatter about Brock Bowers, who, you know, is the stud tight end from Georgia. Very good. I don't like that pick at all. I personally like Tyler Conklin. The Jets don't use tight ends correctly. We're not going to bring in a Rob Gronkowski, a Travis Kelce. I think it would be more like Atlanta drafting Kyle Pitts. And what is he doing there? Wasting away because they don't use him right. We don't have that kind of offense with tight ends. I don't like that. And the only other possibility I see, aside from offensive linemen or Bowers, who might not fall to them anyway, and I'd be glad for it, is wide receiver. If Bowers came off in the top nine, that would mean a wide receiver is falling. So there's three wide receivers that I, like my draft board would have in the top 10, and that's Harrison, Neighbors, who are both going to be gone, and then Adunze. And if Bowers came off earlier, or teams trade up, because this is going to be the year that people are reaching for quarterbacks. All of a sudden, everybody's in love with J.J. McCarthy. I think he's, from what I've seen, again, there's not enough on tape to see him, but they love him now from pro day and everything. More mid-first round for him. But, you know, every year there's a rush on quarterbacks. So the top three picks are going to be quarterbacks. The Bears are taking a quarterback. You know, the Commanders are taking a quarterback. The Patriots are either taking a quarterback or trading back, and that team is taking a quarterback. Cardinals may trade back, and that team is taking a quarterback. The Chargers may trade back, and that team is taking a quarterback. So, well, you know, Caleb's coming up, all these, and that's good for the Jets because the more quarterbacks that go early, the more players that are going to fall back. Again, I would go Alt. If they went wide receiver, I wouldn't hate it. We do need another wide receiver. I would like Adunze. He's very good. But I personally think offensive line is the position to go there, especially if only Alt has come off the board and then you have your pick of the other guys there. So, I say left tackle.
All right. Now, taking a look at the draft as a whole, I guess I'll let you guys kind of talk a little bit about what to expect and, you know, who are the big names that are going to come off the board and is this – it just from the sounds of it, and again, I haven't really like done the extensive look at things, but is this one of the weaker drafts that you guys have seen?
Not at all.
Oh, okay.
Not in my opinion. We have, first of all, if I was the Bears, I wasn't going for Caleb Williams. Now, maybe we don't have this draft, doesn't have that can't miss quarterback. But that's rare. You know, every year they think there's a can't miss quarterback, or many years, and a lot of them miss. There's a lot more Baker Mayfields than there are Peyton Mannings. But it's very deep. I mean, when you talk about first round quarterbacks, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, J.J. McCarthy, Michael Penix, Bo Nix, we could have six quarterbacks go in the first round. Are they all going to hit? No, I guarantee they don't all hit. You know, it reminds me of the year Josh Allen came out, you know, and Josh Allen was the third quarterback taken that year. It was Baker first, Darnold second, Allen third, and then Josh Rosen fourth. Well, only one of them, you know, hit, and that's just how it is in the NFL. So I don't think we have that superstar, though. Some people think Caleb Williams is that. Not to me. Not what I've seen in USC. I don't typically watch a lot of West Coast games, so I didn't see him play a lot. I have seen him play numerous times last year and the year before. I'm not in love with him. I personally think Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback in the draft. So I don't know. If I was the Bears, I wasn't doing that, and this is why. Because Marvin Harrison Jr., he is as NFL-ready of a wide receiver as I've ever seen. He's Calvin Johnson. He's that good. He's going to be that good. You know, he's going to, in his rookie year, he's going to be a top 10 wide receiver in the league, skill-wise. That's how good this kid is. And his ceiling is Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, Tyreek Hill. Like, that's how good he is. Offensive line is very deep. We have another tight end coming off good. I think defense, it's a little weaker. Not as many big name pass rushers coming out. They have more defensive tackles. You got the kid from, what's his name, the edge rusher, Joe. Who am I thinking of? The edge rusher coming out.
Dallas Murphy. Blank on it.
Byron Murphy, yeah. So, you know, he's good. You got a few edge rushers, but there's no every year they'll typically be a top three, a top five edge rusher or defensive tackle coming off the board. We don't have that this year. That's the only weakness I see. It's a very deep draft class. So maybe not as many of the home runs, but you got a lot of starters, you know, that are going to come out of this class.
Yeah, I agree with Al. I think Marvin Harrison is definitely the best player overall in this draft. Obviously, because of the position he plays, he's not going to get the same love. I think there's a really good chance here that either the top four picks or four of the top five picks are going to be quarterbacks. And, you know, I don't mean to slight J.J. McCarthy. I think he could end up being a solid quarterback. I just think that there's not enough sample size at Michigan. You know, he did some very good things, but there were times he made some mistakes. It seemed like he wasn't getting the ball in big moments. They were a very run-heavy team. So I think there's definitely there's upside to him, but I think he's going to be a little bit more of a project. But because, you know, the top three picks in the draft are going to be quarterbacks, he's going to fly up a lot of teams' draft boards. Someone that could have been taken maybe in the mid-teens is going to end up probably as a top 10, maybe even top five pick, just the way things are, you know, shaking out here. So I think with that so much towards the top, and as Al mentioned, you have a couple of really big game-breaking wide receivers. Dallas Turner's a really good defensive lineman. You got a couple of good defensive players as well, and offensive line is a great draft for. So I think you're definitely going to find more quantity over quality in this draft, but I think you're going to get some pretty solid Pro Bowlers. I think, like Al mentioned, I don't think all six of those quarterbacks are going to be franchise changers. They may all be first round picks, but, you know, at the end of the day, I think there's definitely a couple of real good prospects in this class. I think Jaden Daniels, not even as an LSU fan, I think Jaden Daniels has real game breaking upside, and he's someone that I see like Lamar Jackson, only he has a better throwing arm. And there's a really good chance that if LSU had anything but traffic cones playing on defense this season, they could have very easily been in the college football playoff, and we could have seen Daniels on a bigger stage. But he was putting up Joe Burrow numbers at LSU, and they just didn't get the same recognition because they weren't anywhere near the college football playoff. So overall, I think there's some real good players to be had. There could be some pretty earth-shattering trades made, especially towards the top half of the first round. You can see a team like Minnesota, maybe Denver, trading up for a quarterback, getting a little bit desperate. We've heard that teams want four or five first-round picks to move up, but in the NFL, you need a quarterback. In Minnesota, if they don't draft one, they're going to be starting Sam Darnold week one. So they need to make a move here. They need a quarterback to take over after they lost Kirk Cousins. So I think they're going to be one of the more desperate teams that you see jump up to grab whoever doesn't go number two, whether it's May or Daniels. I think you're going to see teams like the Giants, the Broncos, and the Vikings really jockeying for position. I don't think the Cardinals and the Chargers are both going to stand pat. I think the offers are going to get too good for them to stay there.
I was just going to
ask. And I was just going to say real quick that the teams that don't need a quarterback or are like, we're not going to reach for a quarterback, which is usually a smart thing. You know, if you have a sixth pick, say the Giants, and they don't think that J.J. McCarthy is a sixth pick, even if you want a quarterback, you don't reach for him there. And what you could do is trade back and acquire assets, especially for these teams picking high that need many, like the Giants, that need a lot of pieces there. You can take a haul. And you may even be able to get, you know, better players than you would have, you know, instead of one star player. You're now going to be able to get a few players, especially if you didn't want that quarterback. And still possibly another quarterback fall to you later on. So, like Joe said, Minnesota, it's not even just this season. But if Minnesota doesn't bring a quarterback in, you have two of the best young receivers in football there. And Justin Jefferson, they're not going to be happy campers, you know, if they're not putting up numbers, because that's going to cost them money. I was shocked that they let Cousins go and didn't go after anybody. So I was like, well, they have to go in the draft. Well, you know, they're not picking until after 10. So they have to trade up. Joe said Denver. Denver, I don't – they can trade up, and don't get me wrong, but I think they're willing to forego it this year or maybe wait and see like maybe a Michael Penix or a Bo Nix fall to them. I can see Oakland trading up. And then, obviously, if I'm the Giants, I'm trading back. But, you know, the Giants could trade back. Arizona could trade back. A lot of people are saying the Chargers are going to trade back. Some people were saying today on ESPN that the Chargers were going to take J.J. McCarthy, of course, because, you know, Harbaugh's there now. And I'm like, well, you just re-signed Justin Herbert. You're not trading him, not with the cap hit you would take. And that would just be crazy, you know, crazy talk. But, you know, every kind of idea gets thrown out. But there's definitely going to be trades. I think multiple trades in the top 10. Arizona. The one position I wouldn't trade out of, if I'm the first team that needs a wide receiver drafting, I'm not trading away from Marvin Harrison. But a lot of people are saying Arizona, if they don't, look for the Chargers or the Giants to move back, still get a wide receiver and acquire additional assets there.
You know, I was just going to ask both of you, too, is there any chatter or anticipation that there's going to be, you know, a massive trade, you know, that could happen here, that could possibly alter a few things? Is there, have you guys heard anything of that nature happening?
Definitely. I promise you there will be trades. What we're seeing is a lot of teams are saying, you know, trades are going to be right then. And what that does is that gives you all leverage. So if you trade now, you give teams time to talk to other people, to see what other teams are doing, you're going to get a little less. Now, if you're Arizona and you're picking fourth and you wait till that third pick comes in for the Patriots, and let's say the Patriots draft Drake May. Okay, so now you're Arizona. Now all the other teams are going to panic. All top three quarterbacks are off the board. We need the quarterback. We want McCarthy or, you know, whatever. They're going to come up, and now you're going to get, you know, the most for your pick. And remember, they only have, what, 10 minutes, I think, in the first round for the pick. So that's when you're going to get the most. I'd be surprised if there's not at least two trades in the top 10. Minnesota, I think, is definitely going to move up. Minnesota has two first-round picks. I think they pick 11 and 23. So they'll probably package those up together, and they're going to – some people are saying that the Patriots aren't going to take a quarterback or they're going to wait and take one. So that could possibly go up to three. That can go to four. That can go to five. Haven't really heard much about the Giants talking trading back, but – that 3, 4, or 5, there's going to be a trade for sure. For sure, there's going to be a trade there.
Going to be interesting to see in New England, as you mentioned, first NFL draft post-Bill Belichick era. Going to be real interesting there. to see. And actually, speaking of that real quick, it seems like he's going to be getting a job on ESPN with the Manning cast. But what's also your guys' take on the report that came out that apparently Robert Kraft told Atlanta when they were, I guess, inquiring about Belichick, and the quote that came from Robert Kraft, what was it, something about, like, in the end, no one's going to be happy or something like that if you were to hire him? So just curious what everyone's take on that was.
Kind of just proved that Bill Belichick was the most normal one out of the three between Brady, Belichick, and Kraft.
Yeah, I don't put any credence. I mean, you're talking about if wherever you want to put him on the all-time great coaches, as long as it's in the top few, I'm okay with that. But I don't know. Robert Kraft is a weird guy. I've always thought he's a very strange, weird guy. And I'm not taking anything. First of all, I don't like anonymous sources anyway. But even if they said, yes, he did say that, look, we have it on tape and play it, I'd be like, well, okay, he's a weird guy. Like, if I'm a team, I'm signing Belichick in a second. So, there's just that.
It's gonna be interesting.
Say whatever you want about him. He's one of the best coaches ever. You know, to ever, you know, put on the headset.
Gonna be interesting. But as everyone anticipates, and I'm sure for yourself, Al, and Joe, for you as well, tomorrow is your Christmas Day with the NFL draft. And again, round one gets underway tomorrow. Rounds two and three will be on Friday, and the rest of the draft will conclude on Saturday. Again, this is coming from Detroit.
You want to do a quick rundown, top 10?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so I'll give my top 10. I think, obviously, Bears, number one, they're going to go Caleb Williams. Number two, Commanders, they're going to go Jaden Daniels. Number three, I think the Patriots are going to sit pat and they're going to take Drake May. I like him. I'm not sure he's a day one starter, but he has the tools. He's a quarterback. Number four, if I don't trade there, I think Arizona takes Marvin Harrison. Number five is the Chargers. They're going to trade that pick to Minnesota, I think. Minnesota's going to give them 11 and 23, possibly more than that, and they're going to move up to five. And at five, I think Minnesota takes J.J. McCarthy. Six will be the Giants. I think the Giants take Malik Nabers. Seven is the Titans. The Titans are going to take Joe Alt. Eight is the Raiders. If they don't move that pick, and again, I can see them moving. For some reason, I just have a feeling. Possibly offensive line there. Possibly tight end. There's a lot of things the Raiders can do there. But let's stay offensive line. I think maybe possibly Latham or Fashanu. One of the big left tackles. I think nine, the Bears go. The Bears are either going to take...
Eight's actually the Falcons, not the Raiders. 13's the Raiders.
Okay, so Falcons trading that pick. So the Falcons trading that eight pick. Or going defense there. Again, I don't love them taking defense there. I like their defense. But if they stay packed, possibly offensive line as well, to, you know, shore up that already explosive offense where, you know, with Bijan Robinson and Kyle Pitts and Drake London, I think they have the weapons there. Nine, I think the Bears are going to go with the defensive tackle, possibly Adunze, and then 10, the Jets are going to come in and... Depending on which offensive lineman are left, Alt is going to be off the board. I promise that. They're going to go, I would hope, either Latham from Alabama, Fashanu from Penn State, the kid I'm drawing a blank from Oregon State, the other offensive lineman there. That's my opinion of the top 10 there.
I'm pretty similar to you, Al. I do think, obviously, Caleb Williams goes one. Two is really going to be a toss-up because there's a lot of rumors if Jaden Daniels actually wants to play in Washington, but I think the Commanders ultimately will either sort that out with him or just kind of ignore it. I think they take him at two. I think, like you, Al, I think the Patriots stick at three and will take Drake May. Number four, I thought for a while the Cardinals were going to trade this pick, but I think they need to get a big wide receiver. They actually ended up getting rid of DeAndre Hopkins, so I think they need a guy to slide in there and be a big target for Kyler Murray. They want to win with him, so I think they will go Harrison at number four. The Chargers have just way too many needs, so I think they are going to trade back. I think that's where Minnesota ends up to take McCarthy. The Giants as well, I think, take Neighbors. Then I think Alt goes seven. I think Dallas Turner goes eight to Atlanta. I think I like them going defense with that pick. And then number nine, I do think the Bears ultimately go with Dunze. I think they're going to add in a weapon for Williams to go with DJ Moore, and that offense starts to look a lot better. And I do think the Jets go offensive line at 10. I did like Bowers in this spot with them for a while to get another weapon for Rodgers. That seems like it would be a Rodgers pick. But I think ultimately they would be crazy not to get some extra protection for him after the way that season ended last year for him in the first game of the year with that injury. So I think they'll probably go Latham or one of the other offensive linemen. So pretty similar to Al. I think that's where things end up shaking out.
All right.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, the Jets, you need that protection. You need other weapons. Okay? So they brought in Mike Williams, who, when healthy, is as good of a wide receiver in the league, and he's obviously not a long-term option because he's getting up there in age. Can't seem to stay on the field. But they're paying him a lot of money this year, so he's the two. You know, Garrett Wilson's obviously the one, and you don't want to go into the season with Alan Lazard as the three, but I think there's other places you can get wide receiver, and there's not other places where you can get an offensive tackle that's going to be a day one, you know, starter. So that's why I go, you know, offensive line there. So if they didn't, I would like to see what they do later, unless they have on their draft board, you know, offensive linemen that they love in the second and third round. I think it's crazy to not get that protection because you're going to get Rodgers killed, you know, and that's just going to be it.
Well, let's see what happens. All right, so the draft gets underway tomorrow, Thursday.
Oh, my God, I'm so excited.
Wait. Yeah. What?
I'm so excited. It's like a Super Bowl for me. It really is.
Oh, man, all right.
That didn't sound like English for a second.
I know, like, it didn't sound like English for a second there with Al. But, you know, listen, he's excited about that. I've got the Ranger playoffs. Joe has the Knicks playoffs and possibly the downfall of the Islanders playoff. So there's a lot going on. It's a good time of the year for everybody. All right.
Not possible. I'll hedge on it.
And then what we'll do is, of course, fellas, hopefully by next week I'll have the live stream back up and running. If not, we could always do another podcast. But we will then have specifically a draft recap show for Al just so he can talk more about it. And then we could put football to rest until the summertime. Okay? All right.
All right.
You guys have been listening to the Sports Talk 365 podcast. I want to thank everybody for listening. I want to thank Albert Plantamora, as always, for joining us for the football talk and a little bit more. And, of course, for my colleague Joe Cacciavalli, I'm Joe Sacoa. We'll talk to you next time.